This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com, your number one source for Android smartphone accessories. To save 10% on your entire order, enter code AC10 at checkout. Orders over $50 ship free, and international shipping is available. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 187. For Friday, May 30th, 2014. What a week it has been. I don't know about you guys. We got four of us here. We'll say hi to them in a second. I don't know about you guys at home listening and you guys watching and listening live, but oh man, it's been a long, it was a holiday week here in the States. So it kind of threw everything off by a day and compressed it, but we've had events on two continents in two of the biggest and best cities of the world. And I didn't go to either of them. I'm a little pissed off about that. Hi, I'm Phil Nickinson. I run this thing with these guys, Jerry Hildenbrand of West Virginia.
Hey, hey, everybody, what's happening?
Who am I going to say next? Who? It starts with A. They're both ready. Andrew Martinick in Seattle.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
And Alex Dobie in London. No, you're not in London. Why did I say that? Because you were at the event in London.
I was in London.
He's practically there every week.
He's everywhere.
Alex Dobie, who should move to London?
Hey, everyone.
So, Alex, how's your Memorial Day? Did you have a nice one? Do you even care? Do you celebrate Memorial Day?
We have the, I think it's called the Spring Bank Holiday, which is a way lamer holiday than Memorial Day. But we just basically get the day off for no discernible reason, so...
I figure you've worked with us long enough, you probably get to take whatever U.S. holidays you want to now, right?
I don't know, but I'm going to hold you to that from now on.
Oops. Fine. You can have two U.S. holidays a year. How about that?
We'll talk about it later.
Instead of just being like, oh, I'm taking tomorrow off, because I never say yes to that. Oh, man. So, yeah, it's been a little nuts when you think about it. I don't remember Monday, but that's for a number of reasons. Where do you guys want to start? Should we start with the G3? Because that's kind of the big thing this week.
Start with the G3.
There it is. Show it again.
There it is.
The physically big thing.
It's pretty big.
Pull out the antenna.
Oh, the antenna, yeah. So
that's the best part.
Something that you won't see on normal... The normal G3s that we'll be using, probably, the American European ones, is this crazy TV antenna, which we get on the... basically, every Korean phone, I think, isn't it, has these things. They're still pretty popular. Lets you tune into local TV.
I can't let Alex sit over there like he's the only one with an antenna on his phone. Like, oh, he's the only cool guy.
You two need to get together and have a sword fight. That's the only reason I want an antenna on my phone.
You can pull out that antenna and, like, knight somebody with it, right?
Look at my camera there. It's like, I'm going to get you.
Oh, that makes my eyes hurt.
People walking down the hall of my office going, what the hell is going on in there? It's just the antenna on my phone. It's okay. Seriously, it's so awesome. I wish everybody could try it.
Pretty cool.
I think, Alex, that... people aren't really watching quite as much TV over the air anymore in Korea?
They didn't. I think they kind of took it as a given that people just knew that when you get a Korean device, they have the aerial in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume Samsung's still doing it.
I don't know.
Anyway, the G3 has it. So if you go to Korea, you can watch Korean TV.
All right, back up. Let's back up to the beginning and talk about the basic specs of this thing.
And I guess probably the most important thing, the most significant thing, is just the sheer size of this. It's a 5.5-inch phone, which kind of feels in the hand more like a 5-inch. So if you bring it up next to the M8 or the S5, it's a little bit wider, but the tallness is about the same. It really doesn't feel like a 5.5-inch phone. Remember, a couple of years ago, we had the Note 2, which was a 5.5-inch phone. It felt like a big sort of unwieldy phone to use. This is something which you can quite comfortably hold and use in one hand, and we'll talk about the resolution stuff later, but I think definitely probably more than the resolution, the thing this phone benefits from is just the fact that you can have this much screen in your hand really easily.
So I've got, this is the G Pro 2 here. This is like LG's Galaxy Note, right?
Yeah.
What you have there is a little bit smaller than this, right? And I think it was almost a centimeter shorter. I was doing the math today.
Difficult to say. I didn't really spend much time with the G Pro 2. I think I saw it very, very briefly. But you still have the back buttons in the G Pro 2, don't you? You have the, as you do here, which means you can have very, very narrow bezels. I wouldn't have thought there'd be that much difference.
The G Pro 2, I really do like a lot. Nobody's picked it up here in the States yet. I'm a little surprised about that. But it's
you think that's kind of...
If you've seen this, you basically kind of know what you're getting with the G3, and the G3's smaller, a little sexier, right?
Yeah. I mean, just on the G Pro 2, do you think that ship's kind of sailed at this point? Then that probably we're not going to get it?
Yeah, maybe.
The notes kind of gobbled that up on the U.S. carrier front.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And AT&T, if I recall correctly, was the only carrier to get the G Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also in Europe, so.
Yeah.
AT&T carries a Galaxy Mega, too, which is kind of crazy.
Yep.
So they're not afraid of big phones, but I think that, you know, considering that they carry the Note and they probably sell a lot of Notes, that's probably, you know, that's their big phone that they push.
Or on the other side, maybe it was just an LG decision that they sold most of them in Korea, so they're going to stick with that. But yeah, maybe it's not worth trying to ship it out to the foreign carriers from their perspective when they've got the G3 coming.
Talk to me about the display, because 5.5 inches, but it's quad HD, not lower.
It's quad HD, yeah. It's 2560 by 1440, which is an insane number to have on a phone. Like I said, I think the biggest benefit of this phone is just the size and not necessarily the resolution. I mean, it's a great-looking screen. Colors are really vibrant. It looks great in daylight, perfect viewing angles. But I'm just not convinced that the jump from 1080 to 1440 is necessarily one that you appreciate all the time. Like, there are a few cases, like looking at photos. You know, obviously, you can tell the difference. The photos are so much bigger than the 3.5 megapixels that you get on the display. So, yeah, that scales up really nicely. Games as well. Playing Monument Valley on this thing looks really, really great. LG actually has a few preloaded 2K or Quad HD, whatever you want to call them, movies on here. You know, just basic demo reels of nature and stuff that you can play, and those look really nice as well. The problem is most of the content you're consuming is still capped at 1080, and on a phone, probably more likely than not, capped at 720. And the UI is, obviously that takes advantage of the full size of the screen, but most apps, I think, are still probably wasted on such a huge pixel density. So, I mean, it's a nice sort of luxury to have, but I think it's far from essential. And if you take this and put it next to a really good looking 1080p screen like the M8 or even the S5, the difference, I mean, you can kind of tell, but it isn't a huge step to the point where 720 to 1080, I think, was.
What about, I have really bad eyes, right? And sometimes I strain more. Is it almost too much? Is it going to be too crisp, too clear, or letters going to be too sharp?
I don't know if letters can really
is that possible?
The thing that I noticed actually wasn't with any of the English letters, because this is a Korean G3. The thing that you notice a little bit more than just looking at English text is that when you get to some of the Korean apps and you see the ringtones in on this phone are all labeled in Korean because it's a Korean phone. You notice some of those characters look a little bit sharper, a little bit crisper, and you would maybe be able to tell the difference with some of the Asian languages, whereas the difference in English probably wouldn't be as noticeable.
Yes, that's. I had that discussion with JBQ before he left Google about how non-Western languages really benefit from high PPI and high resolutions, and in the West we forget about that.
Mm.
That 720p is good enough to read, English.
But I mean, look here, Jerry. I think we don't need quite so much high-density displays, because here in America, we got what we... I can't even do that accent anymore.
It's the same reason why we kind of put down pen input a lot, is kind of, pen input can mean a lot when you have a non-Roman character set, too.
Mm, definitely. So, I mean, like I say, that overall, I think it's going to depend from person to person whether that it's a worthy upgrade for you. You can kind of tell the difference, and it is sort of worth it in some cases, but I think as a differentiator, it's definitely the size of this in the form factor rather than just the resolution on its own. The resolution looks impressive on a spec sheet, and it makes for great ads, and they were splashing around Quad HD logos all over the place, but I don't think it's one of the main strengths in terms of day-to-day use of this phone.
And so the question is, on the other side of it, how does it affect battery life and GPU performance with all those extra pixels and the extra light?
So this is where I start hedging quite heavily, because this is a Korean phone. This is a pre-production phone. Been using it this week in the UK on networks that it wasn't optimized for. So any kind of battery results you would maybe expect to be not quite up to the level that you would get with something that's properly optimized for the networks that you'd have in your home country. That said, battery life has actually been pretty good, even with the pre-production hardware, presumably the early firmware and all this other stuff. But getting about the kind of level I was getting out of the M8, so a good 15 or 16 hours with relatively heavy use. That's bearing in mind that it's being a bit weird about hopping on and off of LTE, because that whole transition doesn't work so well because it's not a European device. But I've been sort of cautiously optimistic about battery life about this thing, I think.
Well, I know we hate benchmarks, and I hate them as much as anybody else. But I'm going to shoot you a couple notes and maybe get some performance numbers, compared to the S5.
I might have already run those tests, Jerry.
Oh, good. Okay.
They went the way you would expect them to go, given that it's the same hardware as basically the S5 pushing more pixels, is what I'll say.
That's what I was worried about.
In terms of just general performance, it's difficult to tell whether it's the fact this is pre-production or whether it's the fact that it's just the same hardware pushing more pixels around. I don't think the phone I have here, the pre-production one, isn't quite as smooth as the M8. Like I say, I'm not sure whether that's to do with just the nature of the hardware or whether that is just a limitation with the Adreno 330 that you're running into, where it kind of maybe struggles a bit to push 1440p, where it's still fast and for the most part it's still smooth, but if you're running this chip with a 1080 panel, you would notice it maybe a bit smoother.
Tell me about the camera, because I know Richard's been really impressed with the G2. I was impressed by the G2. Mm-hmm. Is it better? Is it the same? What's going on there?
The problem there is I didn't spend a whole lot of time with the G2, but I think the camera compared to the current generation stuff is probably, we talk about sort of the middle ground, right? The territory where a camera is good at daylight, good at low light, good at macro, good at close-up with fast focus and all this other stuff. I think the G3 strikes a very, very nice balance in that sort of respect. So you have good daylight performance, maybe not quite as crazily sharp as the GS5, but pretty good, pretty impressive. There's an auto HDR mode which kicks in, kind of like the Moto X does, so you don't even have to worry about setting that up yourself. And the pictures it produces look good. Low light, I think you benefit a lot from the OIS, obviously, because you can keep the shutter open longer. It's still a little bit blotchy. They tend to sort of overdo it a little bit with the noise reduction, I think. But comfortably better, I think, than the GS5 in low light. So, I'm optimistic about the camera. They also have the lasers. So this has laser autofocus, which, let me see if I can actually demo this, because you can actually see the lasers on the back of this thing if you get it just right. Can you see?
Lasers! That's cool.
Yep. See, I still think that looks more like an LED than a laser. I, you know what? If you send me a G3 to review, I'm going to tear it apart. I'm sorry, but I'm going to get out the screwdrivers and I'm going to take it apart.
Well, I mean, they called it a laser anyway.
Yeah, I know.
That's the branding. It kind of fires out.
Twitchy.
I mean, it's doing what other cameras have done forever. It just uses like infrared light to make it easier for the camera sensor to see it and focus.
Is it like laser with a Z or something weird? Do they just spell it funny? Is it like generic?
No, it's a laser.
Yeah.
Actually, it works pretty well. You can tell the focus is... It seems just a little bit more robust in switching from subject to subject, whereas with maybe the GS5, it would be fast, but it would maybe struggle with things that are off-center a little bit. So, and of course you get 4K video as well, which is nice to see.
And that's the important part. I mean, my OCD can kick in, and I want it to be a real laser, but as long as it works, it works.
Yeah, it works well.
Any words of wisdom for people who are kind of wary about the buttons being on the back?
I'm really surprised how quickly I've adjusted to the buttons being on the back, because I really didn't use any of the LG phones that had the buttons on the back. I didn't really spend much time with the G2 or the G Pro 2. But I found the sort of transition to just pressing the back of the phone instead of the side to be really, really easy. And the buttons are kind of textured a little differently to the G2. I don't know if you can see there. It's more of a rough texture to it, and there's sort of a sort of concentric circles around the power button. So it's easy to see which one you're going to press, and it's not as smooth and sort of flowing as the buttons on the G2. So yeah, I've adjusted probably within the first day to the new button placement.
Fair warning, you will never ever get away from that. You'll want back buttons on every phone you ever touch from now on.
Between every time I pick up a GS5, try and press the camera flash to turn it on now.
Yep. Between that and knock code, or even the old knock on when it was just twice, like ruins you for every other phone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Such a good innovation from LG. What else?
I don't know. Awesome. Should we jump into Q&A and see what people want?
One last question about the G3. Is it slippery and slimy?
No. Oh, actually, yeah, that's something we should mention.
It's a metallic finish.
Metallic, not metal. Rumors for a while this thing was actually metal. It looks kind of metal. You can't really see it there. But basically what they do is they have the normal polycarbonate mold. They have a film that goes over the top of it, and they kind of fill it in from there, and the film is bonded at the top. So when you hold the back of the phone, it still feels like plastic, but you can definitely tell it has kind of a unique texture to it, and it really just does not pick up fingerprints at all. It's the opposite of the G2.
Good.
Yeah, the G2 is particularly bad with that. Extremely glossy.
And they've said that's something they specifically set out to address with this, was the fact that the G2 was such a fingerprint magnet. And it's not necessarily a premium feeling back cover. It's still, you know, polycarbonate. It's still plastic, and you can still take it off, and it creaks a little bit. But at least it doesn't feel horrible and slimy like the G2 did.
I'm excited for it. I really am. I've got one on the way, so I get to play with it too. But
cool.
I'm excited. I mean, how long have we said LG makes really good phones? And I'm just excited that more people finally get to use them and see them.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, do some Q&A.
Yeah, show me some Q&A.
Let's see. Brian Sadano wants to know, would you call the LG G3 the best camera on an Android phone so far?
I would call it the most balanced, or one of the most balanced Android cameras so far. Just because the range of conditions it operates really well in. So you look at the M8 and it's really great in low light, but kind of crap in daylight. Other way around with the GS5. I kind of put the Sony Z2 in the same category where it's just good across the board. But I think the G3 really benefits from the OIS. So maybe that would come out ahead.
Cool. Our pal Sachin wants to know, hey, where'd it go? There it is. How does the LG G3 compare to the G2? I'm going to say refined just from mine. I haven't touched it yet, but just from what I can see. Bigger, more refined, higher density display. That sound right?
Yeah, that probably sums it up. I think the other thing you want to mention is a lot of people were very critical of the G2 software because it was just kind of this mess of stuff that didn't really have any kind of overarching visual style to it. They've actually... Yeah, you can tell there's an actual design language behind it now, which is an improvement on what they had before, which is basically just nothing there. So it's all about sort of geometric shapes, probably too bright there to see, but we have pictures up. It's you have a lot of squares, a lot of circles. They were saying that because that makes it part of the LG logo. But it's just a little bit more sort of laid back. The colors aren't so bright and in your face and, you know, vivid as they were before. They're talking about using a little bit more muted, more mature colors, they called it. And yeah, it's just flatter, it's more modern, it looks more refined and less like they just decided to throw colors and buttons at everything.
Cool. James asks, do you think the Nexus 6, if it exists, will have the same screen as the G3? If there's no such device later this year, I'm hoping there will be a Google Play edition of the G3 that would rock. What say you, Alex?
I'm going to torpedo that because I don't think there will be either a Google Play Edition G3 or a Nexus 6.
Ooh. Now, nothing official on GPE, right?
Nothing official on GPE. No comment on that.
Cool.
But, I mean, look, this is a really great screen. This is probably the best screen in a hand, you know, that you can actually hold in your hand. that LG makes, right? This is the screen they're using for their flagship phone. If they are working on something with Google, and if it is maybe part of this rumored Android Silver thing, and if it's high-end, then certainly you could do a lot worse than this screen.
Sachin wants to know, I'm going to pronounce his name differently every time I say it from now on. Are there any features, hardware, or software of the G3 that you wish it had and ones you could do without? P.S. Phil, you know, you now have started to pronounce my name properly. Damn it. I thought you were saying, could you pronounce my name properly? So, how did I say it last time? Anyway, answer the question.
What was the question?
any features, hardware, or software that you wish it had? Anything missing?
That's tricky. I think feature-wise? I mean, you can always say blink feed, right? I kind of like blink feed these days just because of the way it's got more intelligent, bringing more stuff into it. But of course, you can download that, or you will be able to very soon. I don't know. It's difficult to say. It kind of covers all the bases. I mean, Android right now is a pretty mature operating system, so anything that's not there can be downloaded. I don't think it's missing anything really from the core sort of suite of apps that it comes with.
It's missing a death mode for that laser.
You know, the one thing that's really missing for me, and this is the thing I would love to hear, is some, not a developer edition. I don't care about that. I don't need that. But I want some sort of U.S. SKU, you know, with proper U.S. banding and proper tuning for it, right? And all the you know, just proper software, but without carrier bloat. You know, what HTC has done with its unquote unlocked versions, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the M8 I have is essentially an AT&T M8 without AT&T. I want to buy something like that because I'm just so down on carrier bloatware right now.
While we're talking about SKUs and stuff like that, we should say there are two versions of this, and it kind of breaks down differently to what you would expect. You have one, first we say Snapdragon 801, whatever, all the usual stuff is common throughout all the different versions. There's one with 2 gigs of RAM and 16 gigs of storage, another one with 3 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of storage. And it's kind of, they didn't really give much of a reason for that, but it was, I don't know, it kind of seems like if you're, okay, you're offering more storage, but then, you know, why would you put, either the RAM is needed or it's not, right?
Sounds like they'd spend more money having two different SKUs than they would just putting 3 gigs of RAM in all of them.
Maybe. I mean, they said the software is actually optimized for the 2 gig version. So you're not, in theory, you're not missing out on, you're not getting an inferior sort of core experience on the phone if you get the lower priced one.
Does that make sense, Jerry? I mean, is there like some switch you have to flip to be able to use a third gig?
The first thing that comes into my mind is, with a screen that big, you need more RAM dedicated for the video card. And the more networks and radios you add, the more RAM you need reserved at startup for that file. I would not buy the 2 gig version at this point. I don't need more than 16 gigs of storage. I don't even need 16. But I would buy the 32 just to make sure I'm future-proof if I want a phone that has T-Mobile LTE bands and AT&T LTE bands and HSPA Plus and voice and, a 2K screen. I want that extra bit of RAM in there because LG's not putting it in there and then just not using it. They whatever they say, it's just not there unused.
It wouldn't be. And if it was, then why would they put it in there?
Right.
My kind of conspiracy theory is, I mean, Phil, you know how the specs for LG phones basically are handed down from on high.
Mm-hmm.
My thought was that maybe the 3 gig was what they were aiming for this year, and then eventually they realized that actually Android is a lot better at managing memory these days, or they just wanted to offer a cheaper SKU to some territories, and they thought, right, we've already got it on 3 gigs for certain territories, we can always just kind of switch it over to handle it a little better for a cheaper model. I don't know.
I guess T-Mobile's getting the 3 gigabyte, gigabyte, what that's called, right? The 3 gig model, for what that's worth.
So. And we have to assume that the U.S. carriers are all getting that one, then. I guess. I mean.
Assume nothing.
Yeah, the only one that's been confirmed for the U.K. is the 2 gig one, which is a bit.
I guess it was it Rich Brome that said that the AT&T model is the 3 gig model as well.
Yeah.
We don't know about T-Mobile and Sprint. We know that Sprint is exclusively getting the gold one in the U.S.
Right. T-Mobile's is three. They've
yeah, they said that on their page.
I just said it was. Didn't I?
Yeah, just looking for confirmation.
Andrew, I think, meant Verizon and Sprint. We don't know.
So
yes, we don't know Verizon.
We didn't get anything specific on which precise carriers or precise regions were getting which version, but the general impression was that most territories would get both, that there would be a choice there. But on the other hand, a few days later, the UK is only confirmed to get the two. So wait and see.
Am I crazy for wanting a G3 Mini with a 4.7-inch 1080p screen?
No.
No.
That would be excellent. And it wouldn't be Mini either.
But that's what they'd call it.
It is.
I mean, I was really happy with the size of the G2, even though it had a 5.2-inch screen. It's kind of unfortunate. I mean, they obviously couldn't fit 2560, 1440 into 5 inches or 5.2 inches. You know, 5.5 is probably as small as they could go on that. And so
not yet. I wouldn't put it past them, though, in 6 months or a year.
Right, right. But, you know, at the point, this is kind of how big they had to go. It's kind of unfortunate because the G2 was a good size.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up, I think, for the G3 this week. We'll obviously have more as Alex is tearing into it and I get one, and I'm excited for this phone. I don't know about you guys, but I am. So let's take a quick little break, and we'll get back into it. It is time to talk about Igloo, and specifically Igloo software. Igloo is the internet you'll actually like, and it's about to get better. Igloo's next release, Unicorn, is coming this summer, and with it comes social task management. It's basically a brand new feature that they are integrating throughout the Igloo platform. It's going to provide the perfect balance between project management and getting your day-to-day work done. So Alex, Andrew, Jerry, you guys hear this? I might have little new project for you to get your work done.
Yay, more projects.
More work to get our work done.
So with it, you can manage projects with task lists. It's optimized for large groups of people or groups of large people. You can assign tasks from any piece of content, request changes be made on a document, say. You can create personal tasks that are assigned to you or another person, and you can see all your tasks in one view. That's a big thing for me because I hate flipping around. I need everything in one spot. Absolutely. So you can learn more at igloosoftware.com/android, or if you live in Toronto, you can go see it in person. They are hosting an event on June 12th. With customer presentations by Hulu and Nextel International, those two little companies, maybe you've heard of them. And you can register for that at igloosoftware.com/Toronto. And again, it's called Unicorn. It's coming this summer, and you can find out more at igloosoftware.com/Android. So, cool. Might have to try that. Yeah. I'm going to try that. I'm going to give Jerry and Alex and Andrew all the tasks. Task all the things.
Another thing to...
I'll find the button tasks. That says... Archive.
Mark all us red.
All right, so where do you want to jump into next? How about Andrew's got a new toy there this week?
It has so much faux leather on it, you wouldn't even know.
What is it? What's it called?
It's called a Samsung Chromebook 2. Oh, you can see the stitching beautifully there. It's like a giant Note 3 on the back of this thing. The Chromebook 2 is what we've been waiting to ship for, 4 weeks now since it was supposed to be shipping, and it was announced like 3 months ago, and the ship date got pushed back like 2 months, and then only 6 weeks, and then 4 weeks. I've got the 13-inch model, and the big thing is this is an ARM Chromebook from Samsung that, you know, they said doesn't suck like their old Chromebook, because I think all of us have used the old Series 5 Samsung, and it's a dog, pretty much. Well, this new one has the new Exynos Octa 5800, I think it is. And so it's kind of like a higher-end Chromebook. So we're talking $399 for a 13-inch is probably about $100 more, maybe even $150 more than you'd spend on your average Chromebook, which is kind of, you know, that's a big difference. And so they put a 1080p screen in it, 4 gigs of RAM. It's a really premium build quality, huge trackpad, full-size keyboard. It's interesting. I was really worried about the ARM processor in there, but it seems to be pretty good now. We'll have to compare it more to the new Intel. You know, we have fanless Intel Core i3 Broadwell based Chromebooks coming out, and you know that's going to kick up the power savings and the performance even higher. But over the Haswell ones that are out now, but right now I'm pretty happy with it after you know having it for a whole 24 hours. Right, I'm not ready to exactly write out the full review, but I don't know. It's interesting. A lot of people are interested in it, so I'm ready to give it, you know, a couple weeks of actually using it. It takes a while to evaluate a laptop.
Is the Pixel still the best Chromebook out there?
I've still never used one, but Jerry and Phil tell me it is.
Jerry, send him yours.
No.
He uses it.
No.
I've got a couple Chromebooks already. Don't worry.
I mean, I've got mine here in the office. I used it a lot last summer as we were writing all that Talk Mobile stuff, because I would just drag it out back and use it, because we did everything in Google Docs. There's a lot I still like about it. I don't know.
Comparing anything to the Pixel, though, is a little bit unfair to anything.
Well, I'm not comparing. I'm asking what the best one is. If Pixel's the best one, it's still the best one.
I think, well, we talked about it a little bit before we went live here about, you know, Jerry talked about it still having not very good battery life, and it's a bit big and clunky, but you know, obviously that screen is beautiful and it's the best, you know, it's the best, you know, incarnation of Chrome OS, I think you could say.
You know what? That's like the one Google product we haven't seen a huge discount on at some point too, right?
That's still $1,200.
Yeah.
But it is, I'm kind of waiting for Chromebooks to fill out the whole price range. So this is, aside from the Pixel, this Samsung Chromebook is the most expensive Chromebook you can buy. And it's only $400. And it's built the exact same build quality-wise, screen quality, as its $1,000-plus Ultrabooks running Windows 8. So, aside from the touchscreen. So, it's kind of interesting to see that. You're getting the same super high-quality, you know, build and styling and everything with a faux leather back for less than half of what the Windows version costs.
But I really want that $799 Intel i7 1080p non-glossy Chromebook with 16 gigs of RAM. That's what I want. I'll put the Pixel aside when they can deliver that.
And so the interesting thing was when Intel and Google kind of had that little, you know, showing off these fanless Broadwell-based Chromebooks, it was, you know, there are a lot of questions. Okay, so you just showed us 15 new Chromebooks, and they're all 11 inches, 1366, 768, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage, you know, bargain bin kind of specs. You know, where are the higher-end ones? And they said there's just not really a place for the higher-end Chromebooks for them yet. That's still dominated by their mid-range Windows stuff. And then at the high end, they're Ultrabooks at the, you know, $900 to $1,500 price points, which I'm kind of not buying that. I think that they're just a little worried about putting too much weight behind Chrome OS yet.
And to be fair, and Andrew, you can back me up on this, that's all you need. A little Intel, you know, Celeron with 2 gigs of RAM is all Chrome OS needs.
That's all it needs to run. And I think I'm kind of fighting it from both sides at the same time, because people say, oh, when are the higher, ask me when the higher spec Chromebooks are coming. And I say, well, yeah, you're coming at it from the Windows and Mac side, where a Core i5 and 4 gigs of RAM is a good starting point, and you don't need that for Chrome OS. But the real problem that I have with these lower-end machines are screen quality, trackpad quality, and just overall build. You know, they're built like $250 computers, maybe a little nicer than your average $250 computer, because there's no licensing fees or associated crap with that pushing the price up. But, you know, there's something that this Chromebook 2 shows is, you know, you can have a thin, light, you know, doesn't creak in your hands, really well-made laptop, and it's only $400. So I know that it can be done at this price point, and I think it's just a little bit of a cop-out saying that nobody's demanding a nicer Chromebook.
I just want that hardware. You give me something with Intel and lots of RAM and a big hard drive, ship it with Chrome OS so you don't have to spend money for software, and I'll put the software I want on it.
Right. Put Crouton on it.
Richard Allen has a very important question for you. Can it run Crysis?
Nope.
I thought it was important.
Dang.
The Pixel probably can.
The Pixel probably could, yeah.
Pixel for the win.
Best Chromebook ever.
I don't know if we have any other Chromebook questions, but we can move on if after those. Let's see. Alex is going to sleep here. Well, one thing.
Am I the only one that doesn't have a Chromebook of any sort?
I tried to fix that. You didn't want... We need to get you one, make you use it.
Let's see. Paul asks how the keyboard and trackpad are. Drastically better than any other Chromebook that I've used, but still, I mean, just not on MacBook Air level, or I haven't used the Pixel's touchpad. I hear that one's good as well, but keyboard is good. Touchpad needs some work, and I think part of that is on the Chrome OS side, not having really fine controls for the trackpad scrolling rate and pointer speed and things like that. It's a little rudimentary still.
The Pixel trackpad, I think, is just about one of the only ones I've ever used that's as good as a Mac trackpad.
Yeah. But like Andrew said, you don't have the fine grain adjustment for pointer speed or click rate, and that's Chrome OS just doesn't have it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few things that Chrome OS still needs to do. Like I was talking about this being 13 inches at 1080p, there's no way to scale the UI. That's a Chrome OS problem that needs to be fixed. And as we have this range of hardware covering $200 to $1,200, you need Chrome OS to scale better. So, and ChromeCentral.com.
Do you guys think we're going to see any more Chrome OS stuff at I/O in a month?
I think we're going to see software stuff. I don't know about new hardware. It'd be awesome if there was a Pixel 2 and you brought me one home. I'm sure we're going to see lots of developer stuff for Chrome OS as well as some new features.
Yeah, I mean, you see little, neat new features coming through Chrome OS, especially in the beta channel updates every couple of weeks. You want to see, they're going to show off some big stuff. Last year, they showed off a lot of what, HTML5 was capable of doing in the browser and Chrome OS and, they're going to keep showing under the hood stuff.
This Stars thing that got published a little early this morning, it's not ready for prime time. We shied back a little bit on it. It was fun to look at for a few minutes, but that's far enough along that something's going to happen with that. That'd be great to show at I/O.
Yeah, Jerry, give me like the 30-second version of what that is, because I know everybody sees it and the kids are all, it's a leak, awesome, I want it, I want to use it. And there's kind of a reason why you might not want to right now, right?
Right. Well, right now you don't want to use it because it's not finished. And digging through the source and the permissions, I uninstalled it. It's not ready yet. You don't want this just hanging around. It's a bookmark manager replacement. And it looks like Google is going to intelligently, if you've got a lot of bookmarks about Android, and Google notices you don't have Android Central in there, well, they'll just add Android Central for you, or another site. They curate bookmarks for certain subjects, and they're going to add them in if you opt in for that. Right now, it didn't work long enough to really dig into it. It only worked for a little while, and then Google closed everything down. It doesn't work as it should. So there's still a lot to learn about it, and I assume we will very shortly. It's very close to being ready, but not quite ready.
Cool. You want to talk about Moto X real quick?
Always.
Oh.
Best phone ever. I could put the Moto X on top of the Pixel and just throw everything else with a cord away.
Well, Jerry, they're not going to make it in America anymore.
Well, did anybody really think they would after they sold Lock, Stock, and Barrel to a company in China?
So, well, that's not done yet. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that they're shutting down the Fort Worth, not so much manufacturing, it was assembly. They were, when you order your custom Moto X, that's where people are picking them out of bins and slapping them together and sending them to you within, five days or whatever it was.
Sourced every single part of that phone from usually China, Taiwan.
And that's something Google could do because Google doesn't care about making more money that way. they have other ways to make money. They could afford to have something like that and barely break even. But Lenovo or whoever is going to run Motorola, it feels right. It's not final yet. Google wants rid of them. That's not something another company is going to want to support.
Even then, I don't think it would have been given that it would keep going if the Lenovo sale hadn't happened, because Google from the get-go has said, look, we're not buying Motorola to not make money off them. Even never mind all the conspiracy theories about as soon as they bought them, they knew they were going to unload them.
Yeah.
Only for the pay, you know, whatever. You don't launch that sort of initiative, I think, without knowing how much money it's going to cost.
Right. And they look at the books there.
I'm convinced that the Moto X was not a way to make money at all.
Yeah.
It was just a way to satisfy certain people while they made money on the Moto G and the Moto E and when the Moto F comes out and the phones that they're going to make tons of money on.
And the whole thing behind this manufacturing it or assembling it, see, there we go, assembling it in the U.S. was mostly they try to promote it as, oh, we can get a really quick turnaround time and we can ship out, you know, the next day on your custom Moto X. They talked at MWC about when they launched Moto Maker in the UK and Germany that they're still able to get a 4-day turnaround or a 5-day turnaround going straight from China to Western Europe. So it's not that big of a change. And it's something where at this point in the Moto X's life, if you don't have, you know, huge sales and huge scale of sales to the U.S., it doesn't make sense to keep that huge plant and 700-plus employees working there full-time. If the, you know, Moto X sales, I don't think are going anywhere as strong now as they were 2 months after it launched and it was opened up to everybody in the U.S.
And you've got to imagine the way they are on the life cycle of that phone right now. They're going to be transitioning to the next one. It's going to be the ideal time to shift production over and to get things ready for inevitably when Moto X Plus One or whatever it is appears, and they want to get that with the Moto Maker side of things optimized for, you know, getting that a little bit more streamlined to not just the U.S. but Europe as well.
Yeah, and they tried the Made in the USA thing, and I don't think that they got enough brand equity out of that to make it, you know, we knew that it wasn't efficient at all to do Moto Maker, and they were kind of banking on the fact that they would get increased sales and some brand equity out of the fact that it was, you know, put together in the U.S., and I don't think that those numbers worked out.
Well, I mean, they're losing how many hundred millions of hundreds of millions of dollars?
Hundreds of millions.
All I know is if after they close down, if they have an auction, I'm going down there and buying like bunches of wooden backs and orange buttons.
At least you're going to buy the factory. That would be pretty fun.
Start up an Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
The Samsung original Galaxy Gear has been updated and now runs Tizen.
It's been de-galaxied.
De-galaxied? Yeah,
is it still technically a Galaxy?
Galaxy,
because how does that work?
I don't know if I ever saw an answer on that. Need to find out. You know, the big question is, what does this mean for you? And the short answer is, not a whole lot.
Well, it means now you can't sideload Android apps.
Right, that's the biggest thing it means.
If you really wanted to play Android apps on that tiny little screen.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the whole, look at this, you can sideload an app onto a full build of Android, which you knew you could do. So
Samsung saving you from yourself there.
Basically, yeah.
I'm not surprised that Tizen got ported back. I'm surprised it came with Android on it to begin with.
Yeah.
Samsung quickly learned they don't need Google's blessing for Android on a watch. They don't need Google Play. They don't need to follow any guidelines. When you're at that point, why don't you use the operating system you're more familiar with because you built it in-house?
And it's got to have lower overhead, right, as far as processing and...
Well, it can. I mean, Tizen is a lot like Android or like Firefox OS or, you know, like the OS on some of those old Nokias, Mego. It's a Linux kernel with user space stuff on top of it, just like Android. And you can scale that however you want. It's probably easier for Samsung to scale Tizen because they work with Intel to develop it than it is for them to scale Android because they have to learn from Google how to do it. There's a difference there.
I'm just still kind of surprised that they, I mean, I don't know how long it took them to set up this update process and get it all set up, but they've already moved on to the next generation. I'm kind of surprised that they spent any amount of time back, you know, backporting the original gear to run Tizen instead of Android.
I think it's probably a case of looking after the early adopters. If they have a collection of very loyal Samsung users who will have bought in the first generation gear when it was replaced, remember, only 6 months after it first came out.
Right.
So if you want to keep those people sweet, what you want to do is get them on the latest software, whether that's based on Android or Tizen.
And, you know, let's be honest, it's got a year warranty, at least, in some places longer. Samsung has a little bit of a responsibility to make sure it's safe and operates as advertised for that year. So I'm glad that they did it.
Speaking of Samsung, the Galaxy S5 Active is now official.
In camouflage.
In camo. That's actually probably the most awesome thing about this phone.
That makes me almost want one.
We're going to sell a lot of them down here where I live. Yep. I reckon.
My lawnmower's camouflage. I'd love to have a camouflage phone to go with it.
So what do you guys think of the fact that it's basically just an AT&T announcement, right? No one, there's been no global announcement. It's just AT&T, just in the U.S.
So it was the last one, right?
Came out in Europe. It was announced, I think, in Europe first.
Okay.
It was AT&T only in the U.S., but not.
Yeah.
Alex, I think we can go a step deeper with the Galaxy S5 actually being waterproof and dust-resistant. Well, water-resistant, dust-resistant, moisture-resistant, and shock-resistant. Why do we need an S5 Active at all?
That's kind of what I was getting at. We're thinking maybe, okay, is this... Who's leading this? Is it Samsung taking the initiative to make this product, or is it AT&T asking for another one? Because maybe, maybe the S4 Active was a big seller for them. Who knows?
Well, it certainly has more of a rugged look to it than the GS4 Active did. But you can
put a nice case on a GS5.
One at a time, girls.
That's you, Alex.
Oh,
I didn't have anything constructive to add. I was just saying it looks like the bottom of a shoe.
Kinda, yeah. In camera,
it looks like that Casio Gazzoni. Well,
that's what all these rugged phones look like. They look like the bottom of a construction boot.
Yeah.
So there's that.
I don't know. I like the S4 Active. I only ever got to play with it at the store.
The S4 Active wasn't quite as crazy rugged, though.
But I really like the idea of not having to worry if your phone hits the bathtub or you drop it in the driveway and it rolls down into the puddle. I like that a lot.
So here's the S4 Active, and it's certainly, I mean, it's got a little bit of that rugged look to it, but not nearly as much as I think the 5 that was just announced.
I mean, could you really get away with having that kind of rugged phone again with the way the S5 is? Probably not. You probably want to crank it up a little bit further and have a phone that you could drop up off the top of a building or something without it smashing.
I would have liked to seen the S5 Active be more, a higher IP rating for resistance of dust and water. That to me was a no-brainer. If we're going to make a rugged one, let's make it more waterproof. Let's make it 50 meters waterproof.
Well,
maybe that's too hard to do. I don't know.
I do like that we don't know how widespread this launch is going to be, but I do like that they're going to have a rugged phone that has, current high-end specs, because a lot of these, rugged phones are mid-range, kind of low or lower-end, 4-inch 720p displays and, a gig of RAM, kind of lower-end stuff for 2014. It's nice not to have as much of a compromise in order to have a rugged device that you could, like you said, drop in the driveway.
And we're thinking as four bloggers who sit on a chair or stand at a desk or do this all day, there are guys out there like firefighters, people on active duty, construction workers, farmers. Those people use cell phones too, and they're going to beat the crap out of their phones just through their normal everyday life.
I mean, people that just travel around a lot, you see so many phones wrapped up in big OtterBox cases because they know they're going to drop them just through the course of the day. Why not have that integrated a little bit?
Kills me to see that.
Yeah,
it does. Where's your phone? I can't see it. You want to do some more Q&A?
Sure.
I'm just going to start at the top here. Ben wants to know, what is the one thing each of you would like to see in the next iteration of Android? So, kind of get this every week a little bit. For me, it's still car. I still want to see what this Android automotive thing is all about and how it works, and I easily want to be able to walk into my car with my phone and stream music somehow, whether it's Google Play Music or something else, and just have it work. Somebody needs to master that.
I'm going to take it back a little bit to just the basic phone functionality. I think the way Android is now, it kind of came from devices that were maybe 3.5 or 4 inches. And if you're looking at, you know, for a device that's, you know, five to six, that you're not necessarily using one hand with, or if you are, you can only reach a certain part of the screen. I think maybe it's time to look at UI changes to kind of consolidate things in a way that makes it easier to use it with a part of your hand that can reach the screen. I think maybe if the next part of if the next iteration of Android is going to introduce UI changes, that's going to be where you want to look, not necessarily just, you know, just purely visual things. It's going to have to be functional as well, to make it easier to use these larger devices.
I want just to see USB host supported at the core. And improved. I want to be able to hook a webcam up to my Android phone or a CD drive. Now that the Android kernel is mostly mainline in the Linux kernel, there's no reason it can't be done. And I want to see it. You look at an iPad and all these microphones and equalizers and everything else you can buy that just plugs in. Android could do that better if they just supported every USB device. Linux does. Just do it.
That's kind of something that the iPad has had kind of a leg up, is getting people to build, you know, big accessories, and you know, you get keyboards and MIDI controllers and microphones and stuff. It's still a little janky, but it's actually supported, and you get some really powerful apps on that side that if you get full USB host, especially on the tablet side, it could unlock a lot of third-party stuff.
Sorry, I had to yawn. I know that's not good radio, but it's Friday afternoon. It's been a long week.
Well, good thing we're on video.
I know, right? Nobody saw that. Ryan wants to know, Andrew, would you choose an Intel Haswell Chromebook over an ARM Exynos Chromebook? Yes or no? Yes or no?
Intel Haswell. Well, so Haswell's kind of the last generation, so not necessarily. I think that this new Chromebook 2 that I have is kind of up to the performance of a lower-end Haswell Celeron. How that changes things when these new fanless Intel i3s come out, I'm not entirely sure.
Fair enough. Phil, this is not Android-related, but can you get Alex to decorate his room? The background looks a bit dull compared to the rest of you guys.
So the problem is we always do this really late at night, which means I look all sort of yellowish and washed out, whereas the rest of you guys are in glorious daylight.
I can in fact confirm that Alex looks like that even in the
sunlight. I just carry a sepia filter around with me. Is that how it works?
Remember a couple years ago when – was that Google I.O. the first time you came to the States?
I think yeah. It was.
And, like, we had Alex show up a day before the rest of us just so he could chill and you know, relax from the flight. I get here, and dude is just a lobster. Like, he'd been out in the sun for, I think, about 13 minutes. And just done. That was it.
California, man.
Let's see. What if the LG G Pad 10.1 is actually secretly the new Nexus 10?
It's not.
No.
It's not. I've seen it and played with it. It's...
What if it is not?
Getting a bit of lag there, but no, I've seen it and played with it. It's a low-end 10-inch tablet.
Yeah.
In fact, it was kind of crazy having the G Pad 10.1, which is a 720p 10-inch tablet, you know, right next to the G3, with its crazy high pixel density screen.
Oh, here's a good question from Harless58. Is there an ultra power saving mode on the G3 like there is in the S5 or the M8?
There is a regular power saving mode. I'm not sure if it's an ultra power saving mode. Let me check.
Or extreme. Maybe it says extreme.
It's not extreme. It's still battery saver.
Supposed to say no, it doesn't need one.
Ooh. Well, let's see. No, it's just regular battery saver. Usual stuff. It turns off data sync and other stuff like that.
I haven't used Extreme or Ultra or any on any of these phones yet.
No, I want my phone to work.
I don't know how all those work, but I would think that on the S5 or the M8 or the G3, just download the one from Qualcomm that's designed for that processor that put in it that they built and use it. I don't know, you know, why you want to shut everything off. Let the Qualcomm app throttle your stuff down instead of closing it.
Rumor has it the camera is stuck on me. For that, I apologize profusely.
Oh, good. I can take this.
Nobody should be subjected to that. I don't know what's going on there. Sorry. Whom from Android Central will be at Google I.O., and are you expecting the keynote to be a little more boring this year compared to the last due to the departure of some of the more exciting presenters from Google? Right now, I'm the only one who's going to be there, which I think will make it twice as exciting because it'll be twice as much work, at least.
Better mute my mic before I go on.
I'm trying to get more of us in there, but that's all we got right now. No, I don't think it's going to be boring at all. Absolutely not. I think that's unfair to anyone and everyone who presents. I'd love seeing Vic up there. I'd love seeing Hugo Bear up there, but you know, things change, and things will change again.
Anybody that saw Sergey come running out in a skydiving helmet can't say it's going to be boring.
Yeah. There's absolutely nothing boring about any of this. So, how long do you think it'll be before we see 4K tablets and phones? Another year.
Yeah, I think so. Next year. It's already on Samsung's roadmap for next year.
We're going to see it one iteration before the hardware to drive it is ready.
Yeah.
Just like the original Nexus 10.
Yep.
How about let's talk about lynda.com. LYNDA.com. This is actually pretty important, especially if you want to learn about things, and I am all about learning about things. So Jerry is constantly trying to get us to become Android developers, which, you know, kind of makes sense because I have a developer account. I should really know how to develop things and not just upload them. So with lynda.com, again, LYNDA, Jerry, you can basically just learn anything and everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've got great introductions to Android Studio or the SDK, and they go the whole way through, you know, building apps, and they even, you know, have courses that will help you monetize your games. They have a lot there for Android development.
And not just Android development, obviously. Right. We've talked about cameras before, and I need to learn to use my camera better. So they have these great professionally shot videos that explain, hey, here's how you, you know, use your camera better. Here's how you edit video better. 2,400 courses taught by industry experts. That means people far better at it than you or I, Jerry. Mm-hmm. I think, or at least me. Andrew.
Yes, you need to be watching and participating in all these courses.
You can do it from your computer, tablet, mobile device. They're all relatively short, too. It's not like you're sitting there for 2 hours watching just a boring video. Like, it's quick. You know, 15 minutes, a lot of them, and you're just in and out and done. And by the end of it, you've learned something. You can do it. $25 a month, you can watch everything. And, in fact, this is really cool. We worked out a little deal, so you can try the entire library. Again, 2,400 courses. You can't possibly watch them all in 7 days. Somebody should try. Let's see what happens. Go to lynda.com again, LYNDA/AndroidCentral to start your 7-day free trial. Do it. LYNDA.com/AndroidCentral. I'm going to go learn something this weekend, actually. What do you guys think about the Apple and Beats thing? Do I care?
I think we still don't know. He's leavings?
What?
I said Apple bought HTC's leavings. That's what I saw on
for a lot more than HTC left them for.
Yeah, actually.
You know what? I think it makes absolute sense. You have two companies that are iconic. Whether you think they make the best hardware or software or whatever or not, they are still iconic. Joining the two together and leaving Beats as a separate company to continue to build headphones that Apple now gets money every time one is sold is a no-brainer. The streaming service, hopefully Apple can fix it. Andrew, you can testify has its issues.
And, you know, the world has testified in that they don't use it.
Right. And I hope they get together and make a product for the people that want a $500 pair of Apple headphones with Beats technology, whatever that may be, you can say it's just an equalizer setting, whatever. There are people who want it. I hope they're smart enough to get together and sell it at the Apple store if you want to buy a nice pair of stainless steel and white headphones.
And that's kind of the odd thing is Apple hasn't really done, you know, coming out with EarPods last year was their first big redesign of their included bundled headphones pretty much since the, you know, original iPods were coming out. So it's kind of weird that they've left that. I mean, they're leaving a lot of money on the table by not selling you an additional $150 pair, $250 pair of headphones. You know, and they've left that up to selling Beats and Bose and Sennheiser Health, I think Sennheiser too, and headphones in their Apple stores. And it's kind of odd that they wouldn't just sell something that was own branded. You know, they're plenty capable of creating high quality audio stuff, you know, maybe slightly more capable now with Beats, but and they would get all that money, not just a small percentage of selling it in the Apple store. So from that point of view, it makes sense. Whether or not they needed to spend $3 billion on that is a little bit different.
Well, the $3
billion... $2.5 billion for the electronics, right. $500 well, million for streaming.
Apple has $160 billion in the bank and a bad economy that's not getting as much return as they used to get from it. So they can spend $3 billion to buy a streaming service and a hardware company to build their own headphones, or spend $10 billion to develop it themselves. I think they made the right choice, and don't think they overpaid.
Hey, by the way, the Beats Music app is not going anywhere. They're not pulling that for Android now just because Apple owns it, so which is the right move.
Yep,
right.
They still want to make money from it, and that would just be a bad thing to do, especially after, you know, I joke about it not being used by anybody, but, you know, they have like 250,000 subscribers, you know, that would be a quarter, you know, who knows how many are on Android, but that would be probably, you know, 150,000 people that would be really mad if Beats Music just ceased to exist on their Android phone.
Yup. You know what I'm actually kind of unhappy about this week? You see this Uber thing, Uber and AT&T?
Yeah.
So if I'm reading it right, Uber is going to exclusively use AT&T for data services in the car, you know, however they power their whatever. And in exchange, Uber will be preloaded on upcoming AT&T phones this summer. And it would not surprise me to see it updated on current phones with a ROM update. We saw that happen with the GS5. Or it was the 5 or the 4, I forget which one.
My G2 got an update that did nothing but install the Yellow Pages app.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
You know what? That made me not like AT&T and not like the people that made the Yellow Pages app, and that's
all it did. Yeah, it's BS.
And it could be a really bad situation. I mean, from Uber's point of view, they see it as a huge deal because
absolutely.
100 million people or, you know, 70 million people on postpaid are going to see this preloaded on their phone. But it could hurt them in the long run in terms of brand equity that, you know, Uber was this cool thing that you installed because, you know, you don't want to take taxis anymore. And it's a different, you know, it's kind of a cool factor to use Uber. And now when it's going to be preloaded, you know, maybe they're not going to be able to take on the extra capacity. It's, you know, maybe going to hurt them a little bit, you know, and somebody's going to, people are fickle. They're going to move on to something else if they're, you know, tired of getting bugged by Uber pre-installed on their phone.
I love the idea of Uber and Lyft and all these car services. I love, you know, spreading that around and having more options. I have no problem using cabs in New York or wherever, but, you know, it's great to have that option, I think. I just hate bloatware. I'm so down on carrier bloat right now. It's shenanigans. That's all it is.
And for every person that's going to get that AT&T phone, have it pre-installed and like it, there's going to be 15 to 20 other people or more that Uber's not available in their city because Uber's not available in that many cities, and they're going to say, what the heck is this? Why is this installed? I open the app, it makes me create an account, and then the map is blank because, you know, Uber's not available in Fargo.
Whatever way you look at it, it's all about building brand awareness on a certain level on a nationwide carrier, even if right now it's still only limited to a few cities.
I just think that they're going to piss off more people having it pre-installed than the upside of them gaining awareness.
You know
maybe.
What else?
I mean,
got
playing
it was...
developer.
Go ahead.
Playing devil's advocate for a moment, maybe you know people so used to bloatware being on their phone that would one extra piece really tip the balance that much?
Boom.
That's the sad part.
That's sad but very true, Alex. Once again, he nailed it. Nobody's going to notice unless they retroactively put it on your phone.
Yeah.
Which they
might want to. The release where they're like, Uber covers 170 million people. Like, they're using the carrier pops thing.
Yeah.
If you live in three cities that each have 40 million people, suddenly you cover 120 million people, but 120 million people aren't using your service, and that's just it's not cool. Sad to see. Mm-hmm. Speaking of driving, though, we should have led with this, because this is probably one of the coolest stories of the week, is Google showing off their self-driving cars, which aren't new, but these are prototypes made by Google with no steering wheel, no pedals, just this big cockpit for two people right now. And like, how awesome is that? I showed my daughter last night or this morning. How awesome is that? How much fun is that?
It's almost like the Chromebook of the car world, isn't it?
Yes. People have ridden in a not self-driving car than use a Chromebook, though.
Use your Chromebook while you're sitting in the driver's seat of the self-driving car.
All I was thinking is, like, what if I could stick my kids in these and send them off to school?
I love the idea of it, and I love to see Google doing this kind of stuff. But if you think anybody that's here, the four of us, if you think we're going to see self-driving cars on the road available for you and I to buy in our lifetimes, you're insane.
No, probably not. That's what I told Mia last night. I was like, look, maybe, before you shuffle off this mortal coil, you get to see these things. I probably won't, but like, I love the idea that it's there and they're working on it, and it's entirely possible my kids could see this stuff.
Phil and I are old men.
Well, you're an older man than me.
You're an old man. I'll leave it at that.
But Alex and I, the young whippersnappers.
We both love the idea of a Google self-driving car as long as it's tested and safe. But the other people that are in charge of regulatory commissions that are our age are not going to be so keen to a self-driving car made by a company that's them people from the internet. And that's a hurdle that it's going to be very difficult to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be a very, very, very long time before we see this Google-style car with no steering wheel or pedals or any way to manage anything. It's going to go, short steps along the way. You already have cars that if somebody slams on their brakes in front of you, it's automatically going to stop for you, keep you from going out of your lane, keep you, going the correct speed behind the car in front of you, things like that. It's just going to be a natural progression from there. It's not going to be all of a sudden Honda is going to start selling a car without a steering wheel or Google sells a car without a steering wheel. That's just not going to happen. It has to be a progression from a legislation standpoint and just, adoption. People aren't going to do that. You're not going to give up that control. I think it's going to take a big mindset change. People like Bill's kids that have obviously never driven before, they're going to have to, start driving, quote unquote driving in these driverless cars from the start.
I think Phil's kids could drive. Those girls are smart. I think they could just drive if they want.
If they get a big
they could do it now, they tell you. No, I love where we're going. I love stuff like that. I love stuff like Tesla. Just really good stuff going on, I think. Maybe when I'm 80 and too old to drive, we'll have those.
But then you won't have to worry that you're too old to drive.
Exactly.
You can say, okay, Google car, take me to the nursing home.
I won't even have to say it. It's going to know where I went.
And that's Google's angle right now is people, vision impaired people or, older people that need to get from one place or another two times a week. They shouldn't, have to deal with, maintaining the car and all that stuff. It should just be an appliance to them.
The car is going to be like, Phil, you need to leave right now to reach your activity.
And then just start driving off without you.
I'm going to be like, I'm not ready yet. And it's going to be out there tapping its foot.
Pushing your walker out of the car.
You're going to be halfway where you want to go, and the car's going to say, oh, snap, we lost the route. He's going to run off the side of the road and crash and burn.
We see you want to go into the Gulf of Mexico.
And with that, I'm stopping the podcast. We can't possibly top that. We're done. I should just, if I could take this mic off of this thing, I would do it and drop it. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You can email us. And yeah, I think we had some good emails, too. I don't know if I'm going to read them, because, again, how do you top Google Car?
Old man Phil.
David had a good question. Can you give me a possible reason why my Moto X stock won't let you change the number of home screens? This bugs me since I usually have one when I had launchers. Yeah, they don't let you change them because they know people don't use more than two. And it's just, they didn't think the feature was necessary. I don't necessarily disagree either. Just use a custom launcher. That's my answer to that.
Boom.
Sorry. There, we answered an email. podcast@androidcentral.com. Get us all on Twitter. Go search for us. I'm Phil Nickinson. Andrew J. You're Andrew J. Martinick?
Right? Nope, just Andrew Martinick.
Andrew Martinick.
What's your James stand for? James.
Ah, so you learned something new on the Android fancy. Central podcast.
I figured the Twitter handle was already, and Google Plus handle was already long enough. Adding another letter wasn't going to help.
Alex Dobie, Jerry still convinces, but whatever. We're all on Google Plus, though. That's a really fun place to find us. Do it. What else is going on? Android Central app is cruising right along. We're still testing notifications. Not quite ready on that yet. I know I can, I think I can tell you we're also finally fixing deep links for the forums. So if you go to a forums link, it'll open up in the app. So as far as I can tell, it works really well. I don't know if they're quite ready on it or not, but that's coming. What else? Our Twitter account passed 500, whatever followers this week. That's kind of cool. I'd like to thank all the spam accounts and women who want to talk to me, because I know they're out there.
Yeah, ad giveaways.
Right. So there's no spam on Twitter. But
all of Jerry's favorite parts of Twitter are following the Android Central.
I know, right? No, it's still a nice big number, so that's cool. Very cool to see. What else is going on this week? I think Andrew's on the road. I can't remember if we can say where, so let's not say where.
I don't think we can say.
But I can say that you are on the road. That I can do.
That's on the road next week, and then the next week.
Yeah, and then the week after that, you and I are both gone. I've got stuff coming on. June is going to be busy, boys and girls. We got a lot of cool stuff. I look back at everything we've done in the past 2 weeks between the G3, Padfone X, by the way. We had Mark up in New York checking that out. That's all on the site. Go see that. Just so much cool stuff.
OnePlus One review
is coming
finished.
Up. Makes me
finally got final software for that, right?
Yeah. Final software, so we can actually write something without things changing every week.
Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen it, I reviewed this little thing on the site this week. This weird little Qi charger thing that fits inside the GS5. I don't recommend
bulge.
It. I reviewed the Android Playboy app this week, if you haven't seen that. That was actually fun to write. I've had a lot of fun this week. I like it when I have fun. Mobile Nation's Fitness Month is starting slowly, so you're about to see more. I'll probably write some more on that this weekend. And we're actually going to do it this year. You can do it along with us, so stay tuned for that. What else? I think that's it.
I think we're done. We know that's not it, but...
Well, you forgot the biggest thing in June, Google I.O.
Google I.O.? We talked about it earlier.
Well, you were saying what was happening.
Yes, that's coming up. Hell, that's weeks away. We got a lot between now and then. So, everybody listening live, thank you guys. Everybody listening recorded, thank you as well. Everybody here in the Q&A, awesome. I love you all, except for one of you. I'll let you decide who.
Wow.
Jerry, Alex, Andrew, I love all you guys.
Oh, I was hoping you only loved one of us and we get to fight with nine.
All right, that's it. We will see you next week.
Toodles.
Bye.